Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra is in Zion. Coming to the end of the third parak of Baba Basra, it's been almost a month. It will be a month by the when we come to the conclusion. Third of the Gemara, we're at the top of the Amud. We'll start at the heading, the very bottom of Ninvav Amud Beis. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah. Mishnah says Shlosha Achin Ve'achem Mitzarif Mehem. Hari Elu Shalosh Edios Vehin Edos Achasa Zama. So as we learned the Mishnah yesterday, the Mishnah taught us the halacha regarding the establishment that you were there for 3 years. You need witnesses. You need edim to verify that you were there for the last 3 years. You also need a taina. You also need nomacha, as we've discussed over the course of this parak. But the Mishnah is focusing on the idea that you need witnesses testifying that you were there. Those witnesses have to be two kasher edim, and the Mishnah says also they're subject to the rules of a zama. In the event that they were proven to be edim zomim, so then you do to them what they conspired to do to the original owner. So with that in mind, the Mishnah also described how if it's three sets of witnesses, so then the hazama is going to be, the monetary payment is going to be divided amongst the three of them equitably. The Mishnah also mentioned, which the Gemara now is highlighting, is that the way that you can put together a set of witnesses is slightly unusual. And that is what you're going to do is that you're going to get three brothers. Now, of course, Krovim cannot testify one with another, the Apostle Edus. But the Mishnah says you get three Krovim, you get three Achim, you get three brothers. And what each one of them is going to be doing is testifying each brother per year, together, of course, with another witness, a non-relative. And so, therefore, through these four people, so you can have a successful testimony that a person was there for 3 years. So that means brother together with Acher, second brother in the second year with Acher, third brother the third year together with Acher. And by putting those together, so you're going to have a successful Edus that the person in fact was there. How does that work? And in terms of occupancy, so the answer presumably is because the brothers are not testifying together. In other words, each one of them is testifying about a separate year. Granted that we're going to have to put the years together in order to get to the 3 years of chazakah, but still the brothers are not testifying together. That's presumably how you're going to explain the Mishnah. With that in mind, we turn now to the top of Nizayin Amud Aleph, and we start with today's Gemara. Ha'ushtar d'hava chasim ala beitrei. So there was a shtar where two people signed on the shtar, shachiv chadminai, and one of them died. Okay, so before we continue in the case, so just a quick review of what we learned. We've gone over a number of times. We saw this in detail in the second parak of Ksuvos, and that is the idea of kiyum shtar. Document, once two witnesses sign on him in a Torah, the document now is a valid document, and we were to go forward. However, the Chachamim has a safeguard measure, so they required what's called kiyum shtar. Kiyum shtar is the certification of a document, notarization of a document. A document cannot be executed until it's been notarized. There are a number of ways that you can notarize a document. Three, the Gemara Ksuvos discusses. Number one, have the original witnesses come and just simply say that's their testimony. They'll do that in front of a basin. Basin will then put a henpek. They'll put a actual certification and an actual notary note on the actual document itself. The three members of the basin will be signing on the document saying that this document was certified. And that's one. Two is all you have, a pair of witnesses testifying about the signature, meaning they know the person's signature. And they look at the document and they see the signature and they say yes, we're familiar with that signature. You have two witnesses on each signature. It doesn't have to be four witnesses in total. In other words, if the two witnesses are familiar with both signatures, the two witnesses can testify. But in other words, you'll have another pair of witnesses testifying about each signature. And finally, the third way is that if you already have another certified document in a court of law that's the same with the same signatures and it's been certified, so then you'll just simply compare. And that is how a third possibility in terms of how to certify a document. In the meantime, our Gemara on the top of Nazayin Amud Aleph is now detailing a scenario in which there was a shtar. There were two people signed on it, but right now it hasn't been notarized yet. And one of the witnesses died, one of the original signatories. So now what's going to happen? So the case evolves like this. Asa achu dahai dekai. So v'chad achrin al asude achasim asyadei di'idach. So on the on the witness now who no longer is with us. So there are going to be two witnesses who are going to testify about his signature. So there are really three people in total. In other words, one is the original witness who's still around, who's going to testify about his own signature. And as far as the dead signature is concerned, so you're going to have two people testify about him. However, of the two people that are testifying about his signature, so one of them happens to be the brother of the surviving signature. So v'chad achrin la'asud e'achasim asyadei di'idach. So Savar Ravina l'memer, so Ravina says, okay, I know he's a relative, but I think it's okay. In fact, Ravina says, I think it's analogous to our Mishnah. Hainu, just I'm reading the Gemara first. Hainu masnisin gimel achim v'achim etzarifem mehem. So how is it any different than our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, you have three sets of witnesses, and one is testifying together with them. And so Ravina says, look, I understand it's strange, it's unusual, but there are construct scenarios in which you can have relatives being testifying. So here too, I think it's basically the same thing. Okay, and Ravashi is going to just simply reject it. Amalei Ravashi midami. Ravashi says the two cases are not comparable. And in just a moment, we're going to see how Ravashi looks to distinguish between these two cases. Okay, if you take a look at the second Rashbam, the long one, so the Rashbam over here goes through some basic information regarding Chasimas Ashtar, which really becomes relevant, super relevant to our discussion at hand. Let's to go through this Rashbam together. Meis echad meem kornem shiniskayim Ashtar ve'ilu lo meis haya kol echad ba umeid levado achasimas yado ve'itzarch letzarfimo acher. So the Rashman goes through the Gemara and Ksufas, and I know already went through it, but if the two witnesses were still alive, they both would come and simply testify by their own signature, as per the Gemara in Ksufas. Okay, that's what would have happened had they both survived. However, but the Chachamim say, under such circumstances, that ain tzrichim letzarifim ma'am acher, ela nem alomar zek sav yadiv, armina begemar ledivre chachamim, amana shebishtar hei me'idim, anachnu ra'inu hamava v'chasavnu hilchach betrei sagi, v'lo tzar chad minay la'asudei adachavrei. Okay, and the Rashbam also tells us, and this is an interesting discussion in the Gemara and Ksufas over there, which is that when you have notarization of a document, what are they certifying? Are they certifying the signatures or are they certifying the document? So the Gemara there has a discussion. According to the Chachamim, what they're really ratifying is they're really ratifying the document. So the fact that they're testifying is basically saying, yeah, what this document is saying is that Reuven owes Shimon money, and because Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, so really in their notarization, what they're really testifying is that the loan took place. Okay, now continuing with the Rashbam, v'heichad demeisachad mehem amrina and ha'asam aliba derabban etzarch shnayim in ashok la'id achsimas yad hameis v'acha yad hu levado achsimas yado. If one of them died, so as we just learned together in our Gemara, so what's going to happen is that the surviving witnesses testify about his own signature, but in the other signature now you need two other witnesses. Aval edechay lo yitzarifim achim in ashok la'id achsimas hameis dekeven amanish abishtar hein me'idin, because the Rashbam says, because remember, we're following the sheet of the Chachamim, and really what they're testifying is what is the content of the document, not the signatures themselves. And here comes a critical point, and that is the following. Now what comes out is that when one person testifies about his own signature, really now he's responsible for half the loan. Meaning, remember, that really what happens with testimony is that through the testimony of two people, so we're going to establish the matter. So when the one surviving witness is testifying about his own signature, really now he is 50% responsible for the loan, for the validation of the loan. Shari hulava domeir al chitzim aso vein tzarech acher la'inimo v'chi hadam etzarif im ahum en ashuk la'id al chitzim aso mesa. So now, if he, meaning the surviving witness, were then to testify about the other signature, that creates a problem. What problem does it create? Hadar nafik riva de mamona apumei. You see, now that he's testifying about the other signature, now he is half responsible for the other signature, or a quarter of the total loan now is coming out from based on his testimony. Well, he already was responsible for the first 50% of his own signature, and now that he's involved in the testimony of the other signature, so that's another 25% for him, and therefore he'll be responsible for 75% of the loan amount. And the Torah doesn't want that. The Torah wants shared responsibility, equally shared responsibility of both witnesses, where each witness is going to be responsible only for 50%, not anything greater than 50%. Ishtakech tekula mamona nechi riva nafaka pume. So that means now that this one surviving witness is going to be responsible for everything minus a quarter, or what we would call three quarters. He'd be responsible for three quarters of the loan. Ve'anan al pishnaim eidim be'inan. We need al pishnaim. What the Torah is demanding is that each one has shared responsibility for the obligation. That's why in our scenario where one of them died, I need two outsiders, not the original signature, the surviving signature, to testify. Fine. Now, next Rashbam, fascinating. The Rashbam says, now what happened is that you had a brother of the surviving brother who's testifying about the other signature. No good. The Rashbam writes, Achiv shel eid hachai ba litzarif amachim min hashuk la eid hachsimos kedepushis tetzarek shnaim min hashuk la eid hachsimos deid hachameis. No, that's not the Rashbam I wanted. So, it's the next Rashbam. Hayna Masnisen. The Rashbam says, now again, so the case was brought in front of Ravina. Ravina thought it was okay because it's no different than our Mishnah. Look at the Rashbam. Look at the wording of the Rashbam. Afagav dishnei achim psulim le'edos achas. You know, generally speaking, you have two witnesses who are puzzle. Why? Delo chashivi ela kechad. Because the Rashbam says, because when you have brothers who are testifying, it's not two independent testimonies, it's really one. Two brothers in halacha come out to really one testimony. Because they're kroven, because they're related, because they are really connected one to another, they're considered like one. Okay, how literally to take the Rashbam over here, that two brothers equals one testimony? In other words, you can't take it super literally, because effectively that would mean that in outside of our Gemara, if I had two brothers testifying that A owes B money, Reuven owes Shimon money, so, and I say, well, really they're two brothers, therefore I treat them like one, well, that would mean then that the person who is being claimed against has to make a shvua. Right? Hard to imagine that that's in fact so. Meaning when we say the Krovim or Psulim, generally the way we say it is that they are totally disqualified. Meaning we pay no regard to them whatsoever. Okay, but still. In our discussion, however, the Rashbam makes a lot of sense. In that, as we already established, once you have one witness testifying about his own signature, if he were to testify about the other signature, now he's going to be responsible for more than 50%. So if his brother were to testify about the other signature, and since we view brothers basically the same, we basically run into the exact same problem. I'm just reading the Rashbam. But Ravina thought over here would be fine, similar to our Mishnah. Just like we have in a Mishnah, where I have three brothers testifying over the 3 years, but they're not testifying on the same year. So here also, there are two signatures. One brother is testifying about his own signature, and the other brother is testifying about the other signature. And basically, Ravina is saying, can't you see being the same? Okay, so that's where we are in the Gemara, where it's an interesting case. Basically, now you have brothers testifying, but Ravina thinks it's fine because it's really analogous to our Mishnah. Now we go back to the Gemara, Amale Ravashi, Midami. So Ravashi says, no, the case is not comparable. So he says, Ravashi says, cases are not comparable. But because look, in the case of our Mishnah, where you have the three brothers testifying, you do not have any one brother being any more responsible for the transfer of the property from the original owner to the occupier than any other brother. Meaning, because look, what each brother is doing is testifying about a separate year. it's different, meaning each brother is not working in addition to one another, but basically what I'm able to do now is take their testimonies and put them together. But when all said and done, one witness is testifying about each year, and each brother, even if we did the Rashbam's math, that the three brothers are considered one, that'd be fine. Meaning if I had one person testifying about each one of those years, that one person would be responsible for 50% of the transfer of property. Now that I have three brothers, each one testifying about each of the years, it effectively comes out to the same thing. The three equals one, and therefore each one of them is going to be responsible ultimately for 50%. Here, however, in our case, in the certification of the document, basically if I have the two brothers, and again, we view the two brothers as one, we basically have one entity, meaning the two brothers, being responsible for 75% of the loan. And the Gemara says, and that was what we can't have. And Rav Ashi says, and really the cases are not comparable. Okay. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of the discussion. We start the new Mishnah, Elu Devarim. Elu Devarim, if you take a look at first at the Rashbam. The Rashbam over here says that, again, we go back to the discussion of Chazakah, but Chazakah comes in many different many different forms. We talked about a Cheskas Raya of Gimel Shanim. We talked about a Cheskas Kinyan. That's been a lot of the discussion lately. And also we've been discussing Cheskas Tashmish. Not as much. Cheskas Tashmish is the basic idea where I've been using it for a certain amount of time. You never protested my usage. I therefore will continue to make usage out of it. If you remember, we had the discussion earlier that for Nezikin, we don't assume a Cheskas Tashmish, meaning if I, like, let's say, set up a bathroom, an outhouse right by your property or even in your property, well, you never can make the argument and say, well, that, you know, my bathroom's been there forever, so it's got to continue to be there. No, the Gemara says when it comes to Nezik, you can never establish a Tashmish. We're not going to be talking about Nezik over here. We're going to be talking about regular usage. Let's take a look first at the very first Rashbam, even before we start with the Mishnah. Right, the first Rashbam on the Mishnah, the Rashbam writes, Klamar, Elu mini tashmishin darmin lakamish adam mishamish b'shel chavera. Basically, if I've made use of this in my friend's property, so I can continue to do so. She'im mishamish shalosh adam v'lo michabo, and I've used it for 3 years. It's interesting, the Rashbam over here uses the same interval period of ownership as he does for usage, meaning the Rashbam is of the opinion that basically, even though we're not talking about acquiring it vis-a-vis being an owner, but still, the shear of 3 years is significant, even though the 3 years, as we discussed since the beginning of the parak, has to do with how long people hold on to the documents. Obviously, if we're talking about usage over here, there's no documentation, there's no deed, there's no title, but still the point is essentially not the same, but similar. If I've been using your property for my use for 3 years and you never protested, so it must mean, now I'm going to read the words of the Rashbam. She'im isham shalosh shanim v'lo micha bo chaver yesh lo chazaka lezeh ha-machtik v'yachol liton ata nasati li l'tashmish zeh b'matana o macharta li. I can now make the argument that, look, we must have had a conversation three plus years ago that either you gifted me the right to do this or I bought the right to use this. Because generally speaking, as we're going to illustrate example after example of various types of usage, generally speaking, if I didn't waive my right, of course I would have protested. It's similar, says the Rashbam, to ownership. Meaning 3 years creates ownership, 3 years also creates a right of usage. Okay, that is that's the Rashbam's explanation of our upcoming Mishnah. So really, it's not a Cheskas Tashmish. It's not a Cheskas Gimel Shanim in terms of ownership. It's really my right of usage, where after 3 years, it's assumed that you must have waived the right, otherwise you would have protested somewhere along the way. Okay, the Rashbam over here says, uses the number 3 years. We're not going to see that in the Mishnah nor in the Gemara. And there are those who argue with the Rashbam in terms of the actual amount of time, the interval of time. Others say that it's not 3 years. But in the meantime, however, I just presented the Rashbam. The Rashbam clearly is of the opinion that a right for usage will come in in the course of 3 years' time where the other person never protested. Let's now see the examples inside. We start with the Mishnah. Certain things will create a right of usage, and certain things will not. And the basic ideas we'll see through example after example. If it's the kind of thing where he doesn't mind and he doesn't protest, that doesn't mean that he waived his right. It just simply means that people don't mind. If it's something which is offensive, again, not offensive like a bathroom offensive, but like something more, something a little more aggressive, a little more, you know, what are you doing here? And he didn't protest. That's a waive of his. That's basically an allowance. That yeah, you go ahead. You could use it. So examples: Ayamamid beema bechatzer, tanerichaim vekiraim, omegadol tanegolim, venosin zvala bechatzer, eno chazaka. If I'm just putting animals over there in your courtyard, or an oven, or various types of ovens, small ovens, big ovens, or chickens, or manure in your chatzer, eno chazaka. That's not going to be much of a chazaka. But if I'm building a wall on your property and you don't say anything to me after I'm building a wall on your property, so if I'm building a wall so that I can basically set up my oven on your property, or if I take my chickens and put them in your house, or if I not just lay a little bit of manure on your property, which quite frankly even that is hard to understand, but if I really dig a trench so I could put 3 tefachim of manure on your property, or I heap 3 tefachim of manure on your property, hari zeh chazaka. So if I did this for a course of time, and again, I'm just going to present the commissioner like the Rashbam. If I did this over the course of 3 years, and you never protested it, so after 3 years now have come and gone, basically now the conversation is, you must have waived it to me. You must have given up the right at one point in time. Otherwise, you would have protested it. Okay, so what we find now in the Mishnah is basically a contrast of cases where, because I'm using it for quote-unquote light usage, and you didn't protest, that your lack of protest doesn't mean anything. If it's heavy usage, like the building of a wall or heaping manure on your property, and you didn't protest, so that means now that after an interval of time, I will gain the right and the usage. The Gemara still is bothered by, even though the Mishnah certainly is trying to articulate a contrast between cases where chazakas are not created and chazakas in cases where chazakas are created, but still the Gemara is bothered. Mishnah Reisha, Mishnah Seifa. What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? Meaning, still, when all said and done, in the Reisha, I'm putting animals in your property, it's still strange. Strange, and the Rashbam, the second Rashbam of the Gemara, the Basias Mechitza kind of a Kasaga da Chahashta, the Beinish Ba'ama Sheino Bar Chatzer Zu Ka'amar. Now, at this point in time, right now, the Rashbam explains, it sounds like from the Mishnah, again, the Mishnah doesn't articulate, but it sounds like from the Mishnah we're talking about neighbors. Meaning, it's not a shared courtyard, they're not shodfim, meaning it's not like the first parak of the Masechta where we talked about a chatzah that's shared by two people. We think we're talking about neighbors. And that's why the Gemara really has a hard time, it struggles to understand Maishna Reisha Misefa. In other words, if somebody were to bring their animal into my property and I don't say anything, you think that's normal? Of course that's not normal. And I should say something. And by virtue of the fact that I didn't say something, it, just like in the Seifa, that establishes the Chazaka of the Reisha as well. It's really hard to understand. So the Rashbam already gives away the Gemara's answer, and that is that we're not going to be talking about neighbors with independent properties one from another. We're going to be talking about partners. But right now in the Havamina, we think we're talking about neighbors. And if a guy walks his animals onto my property, and I'll cite the next example in the Mishnah, or if somebody puts his manure on my property and I don't say anything, that's strange. In other words, you shouldn't protest. And by virtue of not protesting, and this has been going on for years, like that should establish a chazaka. And so really the Gemara right now at this juncture is struggling to understand what's the difference between the first case of the Mishnah and the second case of the Mishnah.
Is there a demarcation between the two?
I understand. But right now, at this juncture, we don't know that they're partners yet. In a moment, the Gemara is going to tell us that. But right now, that's why the Gemara says, I don't understand. So, the Gemara now, Amar Ula. So the Gemara is going to provide basically the same idea, but three different ways in which the Gemara is going to provide it. So we start off with number one. Amar Ula, kol shi'ila b'nechze ager, kana b'nechze chavera. Kana. Kol shi'ila b'nechze ager, lo kana b'nechze chavera lo kana. So Ula gives the following explanation. And that is that, look, let's make the following parallel. If I will acquire b'nechze hager, now when we say acquire, we mean acquire, meaning in terms of ownership. Meaning it doesn't belong to anybody, and I do something in order to establish my ownership. So, if it's the kind of action that can create ownership vis-a-vis nechze hager, it's the kind of usage that will establish me to assume that I have the right of this kind of usage. Okay. Now,
He's saying it as a general rule,
and the Gemara now is going to try to apply that over here. Now, benichse chaver namikana klomar. If you take a look at the Rashbam again, I turn to the Rashbam. Benichse chaver namikana. The Rashbam writes klomar. Havi chazaka umiyu akinyan al yidei maus amatana hi umiyu hichnis tanigol masor chabayis tiktani sefer davi chazaka benichse ager lo havi chazaka. Now. The Rashbam over here is bothered by a very simple question. If I, let's say, had nechse hager, where I basically had to open the door in order to allow my chickens to go into the house, so do I acquire the house? So the answer is yeah. And meanwhile, what we learned together in the Mishnah, I'm formulating like a question. If I, it's a statement. If I were to put chickens into the house of a ger in order to acquire it so I own it, so too, if I were to place chickens in my friend's house and he doesn't protest, so I get rights of usage. And the Rashbam goes on to discuss the opening and the closing of the door. It was a discussion that he had just a short couple days ago, meaning that in order to do a proprietary act, one of the examples that was given was na'al. And if you remember, the Gemara did not comment on what that means. And the Rashbam over there says, you have to actually physically put a lock on the door. And over here, you're not putting any lock on the door. In the meantime, however, this is a rule of Ula, and the Gemara says, I don't understand. Maskevla Rav Sheshes.
According to Ula, put a chicken on the, not in the house of the Ger, but on his land.
Right.
Would he acquire?
So good. So Maskev, perfect. So Maskevla, Maskevla Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes is a klalahu. So the Rav Sheshes says, really, this rule of Ula can't cover every single case. For example, let's say I plow a field. If I plow a field, and it belongs to nobody, meaning it belonged to a convert, he died, and I plow the field, is that a proprietary act? Of course that's a proprietary act. Like we discussed over the last number of days, a proprietary act is that any real immediate improvement on property is a proprietary act. Now, b'nechzei chaver lo kana. But meanwhile, if I go into my neighbor's field and I plow his field, so do I get rights to that? Of course not. Of course not. And as we pointed out earlier in the Masechta, he's happy that you plowed his field. Thank you very much. And but you don't now get the rights to it just because you plowed it. And like we illustrated in the last couple of days regarding proprietary acts, if I go ahead onto nechzei ager and I eat the fruit of that field, do I acquire the land? No. Because that's not a real improvement to the property. Taking fruit is not considered a real improvement. Remember, just a short couple of days ago, we had the case with a woman who for 13 years was eating the fruit. And then somebody comes along and does a proprietary act to the land itself. And the person was awarded, the man was awarded the land. She didn't get the land because she's only eating the fruit. So eating the fruit does not acquire. And meanwhile, in terms of if I go into my neighbor's property and for years I'm just picking off the fruit, so I certainly then at that point in time get the rights. Again, going back to the idea that I must have either he gifted it to me or I purchased it from him. Otherwise, he would have said something in the course of the last 3 years. So this rule of Ula, quite frankly, is not a comprehensive rule. It doesn't really cover every scenario. So, Elam Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua. So the Gemara says, fine. So We're going to have to drop his suggestion. And the Gemara says we're going to go on to that of Rav Abba Ravur. We turn now to Nizayin Amud Beis. And the Gemara says, "Hacha b'chaser shutfa maskinan." Okay, so now the Gemara makes a transition where originally we thought the Mishnah was talking about just simply an outsider is going onto my property. And again, the question of the Gemara is Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa. I really don't understand the difference between the cases. And now the Gemara says that we're talking about where there's shutfim. So now they are partners to one another, and it is a common chaser. Now, the Bahamada Kidilo Kapte, Amchitza Kapte. So the Gemara says, look, now that we're partners and we're sharing and it's a shared property. So if he puts animals in the shared property, so look, I understand this is common property. Meaning we both have houses abutting this chatzer. We have a shutfus in this chatzer. Now we did spend the entire first parak of Baba Basra talking about a scenario where we want to split, meaning we want to divide, but right now we're not talking about that. We're talking about where it's shared property. So if he wants to put animals in the shared property, fine, meaning I'm not going to say anything because that's expected, that's normal. But if he now builds a wall and I don't say anything, so that's weird. Even though it's a common property, by him building a wall, and we didn't agree to the wall, we didn't negotiate the wall, out of nowhere he's just starting to build a wall on our common property, so under normal circumstances I would say something. By virtue of the fact that 3 years have gone and I haven't said anything, must mean that I ceded it. Uva amad de kedilo kapti, the Gemara says vatana, the Gemara says okay, but what about a Mishnah Nedarim? The Mishnah Nedarim teaches us the following. If I have partners who are mudar hana from one another, they make a neder that they're not going to get any benefit from one another. Okay, unfortunately, two people who have been working together, sharing together for a long time, and they just simply had enough of one another. So they made a neder saying that they're by Torah law now they're not going to get benefit from one another. So certainly kind of the chatzer. They can't go into the common courtyard. So we're a little bit stuck right now because we just set up our Mishnah Baba Basra as Shutfim. And we just learned together that generally speaking they're not makpid. But meanwhile, once they make a neder one against another, so that prevents each one of them to go into the shared property. Because then they're going to be getting benefit from the other partner. So now, how do I understand the Mishnah Baba Basra the way we've set it up and the Mishnah Nedarim? So Alam Rav Nachman Amar Rav Abaravu Ahacha Berchava Shalachore Bati Maskinan. So the Gemara says, fine, we're not talking about the chutz of the courtyard. In the good old days, the courtyard was in front of the house, and that's where most usages were done. The backyard, interestingly, back then, was much less frequented and much less used. So the Gemara now suggests that the Mishnah is describing not the front, but rather Achori Bati Maskinan. De Bahamada Kedilo Kapte, Vamechitza Kapte. In the backyard where people don't generally use it that much, and now my neighbor comes in and uses it, I'm generally speaking not makpid. But if we're talking about building a wall in the backyard, even though the backyard is not used that much, but I would have said something. Okay, so our Mishnah is describing not the front yard, the backyard, the front yard. I am more particular about, and that's the Mishnah Nedarim. The Mishnah Nedarim describing the front yard. Our Mishnah Baba Basra is talking about the backyard. That's one approach. Another approach says the Gemara of Papa Amar, Idivi Idi Bechatzer, Hashutfim, Vikid de Kapte, Vikid de Lo Kapte. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about the Chatzer, both the Mishnah Baba Basra and the Mishnah Nedarim. And as far as trying to resolve it, so the Gemara says, I'll tell you, it's very simple how to resolve it. In other words, here in Baba Basra, we're talking about money. There in Adarim, we're talking about Isser. Now, granted, the Isser stems from the fact that I made a neder that I'm not going to get benefit. And benefit, obviously, is a monetary issue. But if I get benefit from a monetary standpoint in Adarim, I'm violating an Isser in the Torah. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Mamona Lakula, I'm sorry, Gabi Mamona Lakula, Gabi Isser Lachomra. Look, when we're talking about the Mishnah Baba Basra, and it's a courtyard, and we're getting along swimmingly, or at least we haven't vowed to get not to get benefit from one another. So now, if he puts animals in the courtyard, I'm not going to say anything. Look, it's a common property, and I'm not going to say anything. And it's just a question of mamonos, meaning I don't love it, but okay, we're going to assume that the neighbors generally waive and allow such kind of usage. However, in the Mishnah Nedarim, we're talking about Nisr, meaning that if my neighbor really cares and he doesn't like it that I'm bringing animals into the courtyard, and if I were to do so, he would be upset with me, and I'd be violating an Isser in the Torah, the Isser of Nadarim. So then we have to be more cautious. So very simple distinction between Amish and Baba Basra, which is simply a monetary issue, versus the Mishnah Nadarim, which is an Isser issue. And finally, Ravina Amar La'olam Lokapti. Ravina says that really, no. The truth of the matter is that we will assume both the Mishnah here and also the Mishnah Nadarim that people are not makbid. And so our Mishnah works out fine. Meaning that we're going to assume that, look, it's a shared property, we're shudfim, we're partners, it's a common property, and he'll be okay if I bring animals down to the property, and conversely as well. Fine. As far as the Mishnah Nadarim is concerned, so we're trying to argue now as well, people are not generally makbid. Okay, but the Mishnah Nadarim says that once we make an edda once against another, so then I can't go on to the shared property. How did you understand the Mishnah Nadarim if that's the case? V'hamani Rabbi Eliezer, he detanya Rabbi Eliezer, omer afilu vitur asur b'mu daharna. As far as the Mishnah Nadarim is concerned, here's what we could do. We could really isolate that Mishnah and say that the Mishnah is going according to the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that when people make a neder one against another, things which are normally let slide, Rabbi Eliezer says, people who made neders one against another, let nothing slide, not even vitor. What's vitor? Vitor is like a gratuity. It's like, give a simple example, you go into the bakery, you order a dozen bagels, and they give you a 13th bagel. Okay, baker's dozen. Okay, now what is that 13th bagel? It's a gratuity. Meaning, obviously, I mean, really, it's a marketing ploy, but okay. But it's a gratuity. Meaning, it's understood that that's how commerce is done. You add another bagel. So, is that a hana? Is that a benefit? It's a gratuity. People don't necessarily care about that. Rabbi Eliezer says that once people are making nedarim one against another, so they let nothing slide, not even a gratuity. So the Mishnah in Nedarim that says that once we make a neder one against another, under normal conditions, I'm totally okay if you walk on our common property. It doesn't bother me at all. But once we make a neder one against another, and we're lining up that Mishnah like the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer doesn't even let gratuity slide, so then that's why the Mishnah says we can't go on the common property. But we, meaning the normative viewpoint, doesn't accept the viewpoint of Rabbi Eliezer, so we, even in the case of Nadarim, would be fine with it. But the Mishnah in Nadarim that says no, that's going according to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. So basically, what do we have right now? So now let's just quickly recap. We have our Mishnah that says that there are certain things where people let slide, certain things that people do not normally let slide. And if it's the latter category and the other person let it slide, so then you that's assuming now that you have earned the right of usage. And then the Gemara went into a discussion of, I really don't see the differences between the first cases and the second case in the Mishnah. And then after some discussion, the Gemara basically says, our Mishnah is talking about a partnership, a shared common chatzer owned by multiple people. And we assume that certain things they let slide and certain things they do not let slide. Animals walk on the common property, that's fine. I know it sounds funny, but a little bit of manure in the common property, okay, we'll say it because the Mishnah said it, that's fine. But if it's anything excessive, like the building of a wall, like the heaping up of manure, things like that, the Gemara says that people don't let slide. And if he did, it means that he ceded his rights. And I've now earned the right. Okay. With that stated, the Gemara now is going to take us to the end of today's daf, and a lot of statements made by Rebbe Bana. The statements by Rebbe Bana we're going to continue into through the end of today's daf and well into tomorrow's daf. So we start with it today. The first statement of Rebbe Bana. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rebbe Bana. Rav Yochanan says in the name of Rebbe Bana. So I don't know much about him, quite frankly. We're going to see tomorrow some very special stories regarding Rebbe Bana, but he's obviously, he's assuming he's an Amora, he's a really early Amora, meaning Rav Yochanan's quoting him. So, and Rav Yochanan also was a very early Amora. Rav Yochanan was of the same generation of Rav and Shmuel, and okay, so I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rebbe Bana, b'chol shudfim ma'akvim zedzeh. When you have a partnership, so generally speaking, so they can be makbid one on another. meaning that we have a courtyard, and in other words, you want to use the courtyard for certain things, so the other partner can say, no, I don't want that. I don't want that kind of usage. However, chutz min akvisa, the only exception is going to be laundering, meaning I am legislated where I must let my neighbor use our courtyard for washing their clothing. Because otherwise, if I didn't let my neighbor's wife do the laundry in our courtyard, that would mean that she'd have to go outside. She'd have to go to the riverbank. And she would have to debase herself. In other words, by doing laundry out there, so she would be exposing herself. The Rashbam writes, Chutz min akvisa. I'm compelled to allow my neighbor to do laundry in our common courtyard. Next Rashman, Lefishin Darkin Vichulis Bazos, Shitzrichos Lamo Cham Yechefos Legalo Shok Lamo Benahar. Otherwise you're gonna be sending them to the river, they're gonna be there barefoot, they're gonna be exposing body parts, and that's debasing, and that's embarrassing. It's a lack of tzniyus. So therefore I'm legislated to do that. To allow them to use the courtyard is a private area. Okay, granted, by the way, that it's a private area, but it's shared by the people in the courtyard. Okay, but, right, exactly. But certainly it's better than forcing her to go out by the riverbank. Okay, v'otzem einav mar os bara. The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yeshayahu, and we're going to stay on theme over here. This idea that it is important for women not to be forced to be put in compromised positions where they're going to have to expose themselves. And then the Gemara says, and also additional to that, is that we also have to be careful about what we see. The idea of Shmir Seinayim, right? It's 2017, it's really a hard discussion. It's really difficult. But the idea of Shmir Seinayim is the idea that you got to be careful about what you see. The Navi says, Otsame Nav Meiros Bara, you have to close your eyes from that thing that which is bad. Amar Rabbi Chebar Abba, Zushem Mestakel Benashem Meshach Shom Dos Alakvisa. To the Navi is giving tochacha, is giving rebuke for the people so that they do not look at women at the time while they're doing the laundry. Hey Chidami. So the Gemara says, okay, let's give a little more context over here so we understand this a lot better. Let's say right now there are two ways to get to work. One is going to be going by the river, but there's another way you could take, which is just as accessible and just as easy, and you decide to take the riverfront path so that you can get a good look. So the Gemara says, Rasha who? So there, the Navi's not giving tochacha to that person because that person's a Rasha. So if he's going out of his way in order to look at women while they're improperly clothed, so that person's a Rasha, and that's not what the Navi's describing.
Even if he doesn't look.
Huh?
Even if he doesn't
look. Well, I'm just assuming that if he's going there, when he has an alternative route, so... you're right. Okay, no, but yeah. So in Ida like a dark achrita, and the Gemara says, and look, and you got to go, and you got to get somewhere, and it's the only way to go. So honest to. So the Gemara says, so the Navi's giving tochacha for such an individual, and meanwhile, that's the only way he can get there, and he's considered an honest. So la olam de like a dark achrita. So the Gemara says, okay, really, the truth of the matter is that there is. No, the Navi's talking about a scenario where there's no other way he can go. And still, but still, he has to try his best to avoid visual contact. Right? The Rashbam writes, "Lahatos einav letzad acher, v'hainu demishtabech bekra di'ianis nafshei chasidu." That's what the Navi's saying. The Navi's saying is that, look, there's no other way to go. You got to go there. You got to go in that direction. Right, you drive down 95 and you know there are billboards. So what you have to try to do your best, and right, it's really, you could take the Gemara and really put into practice. What you have to try your best is you have to try to avert your eyes. And even though that's difficult and even though it's hard, but that's what you have to try to do. And that's what the Navi's saying. The Navi's saying that under those circumstances where there's just no other way to get there, and that's the way you gotta travel, but still you gotta make an extra effort to avert your eyes.
So regardless whether he averts it, it's still called a Rosh.
Right, okay, okay. Right. So, by me, Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Banai. So, here are the dialogue between Rav Yochanan and Rabbi Bana. Rav Yochanan asked the following question from Rabbi Bana. The cloak of the Talmid Chacham. So, could you give me a description of what it should look like? So, Kol She'im Besar Nira Mitachtav Talis Shel Talmid, I'm sorry, Mitachtav. So, the cloak has got to be long enough where you don't see any of the skin of the Talmid Chacham. Talis Shatam Chacham Ketzad. Now let's give a description of the talis. Koshein Chaluko Nira Mitachtav Tefach. As long as you don't see the chaluk underneath it. So basically, again, the fashions have changed over the course of years. My best example, an illustration of fashions changing over the years since the writing of the Gemara in Nida says that a man is not allowed to wear pants. The Gemara is bothered by a very simple question. It has to do with this week's parsha, or I should say better. It's this week's parsha also. But the Gemara is bothered by simple question. The Kohanim wore pants, right? The Mechna Seba, Yuah Besaro. All right, and the Gemara answers. But anyway, the Gemara Nida says that a man shouldn't wear pants. So just talk about how things clearly have changed in terms of fashion over the years. So that's my best example. So the what do we do about the fact that the Gemara says you're not allowed to wear pants? Okay, that's... when we get to Gemara Nida, if I remember, I don't remember what daf it's on, but when we get to the Gemara Nida, when we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. But in the meantime, however, clearly what they used to do back in the good old days is they used to wear two layers of, I guess what we would call a toga, you know, some sort of robe. So they wore two layers. The lower, the inner layer is called the chaluk, and the outer layer is called the talis. So, right, we refer to the talis as, you know, the four corner garment that we wear because we don't wear four corner garments. Right, that's, you know, that, you know, talk about other fashion changes. Right, back in the good old days, they used to wear four corner garments as actual clothing. We don't, so basically we manufacture four-corner garments so that we can fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. But in the meantime, so they had the inner cloak and the outer cloak, and again, Rabbi Bana says, from a point of snius, kavod, meaning the way that you should present yourself, is that the outer garment should go long enough so nobody even sees the inner garment. Okay, let's try now to describe the table of a Talmid Chacham. Okay, I'll try to describe it. I mean, I'll read the Gemara, I'll explain it, but to the best of my ability. Shnei shlishi gedil, vishlish gilai. So two-thirds of it are going to be covered with a tablecloth, and a third of it is going to be uncovered. Some explanation over here. Again, I'll try. I'll use the Rashbam. Shnei shlishi gedil, vishlish gilai. Shnei shlishi rochav ha-shochan mechuse b'mapa. So two-thirds of it is going to be covered with a tablecloth. Mitzada ochlen lakanech is bihan. Now, this is funny, and it's true. Back in the good old days, they didn't know from napkins. Yeah. So what?
Do that still.
Okay. You're right. I know you're worldly. So back in the good old days, so good, you ate, and now you want to wipe. So tablecloth. Okay, that's why it's there. Don't try this at home. Don't try this in someone else's home. So lekanech is pia velasis alas apas and to put bread on it. Ushlish achitz on megula, but the last third of the table leave uncovered. Lehaniach alav karos vekosos shaloi kalkalu hamapa. You see, you don't want the tablecloth to get dirty. Vizbazu ha'ochlin, because right, exactly, because you need something to wipe yourself on, and so therefore you don't want the tablecloth to get dirty because you need something to wipe yourself on. Okay, like I said, I'm trying to explain it. Okay, so just let's do one more for today, and and then we'll conclude. So that's how the table of a Talmid Chacham should look. Ve'alav karos ve'yerek v'taba. I'm sorry, ve'yerek. And on the uncovered part, you put the plates, you put the vegetables, like I tried explaining it through the Rashbam. V'tabasu mechutz. Now there was a hook, and the hook was used in order to hang the tablecloth. Where should the hook go? So the Gemara says it should be mi bachutz, it should be on the outside. V'hatanya tabasu mibifnim. Now some say it should be on the inside. Now here a picture would be worth 1,000 words, the outside versus the inside, but I get the basic idea. Lo kashya, you'll see through the answers. Hadika yinuka, hadalek yinuka. If you've got small children in the house, so therefore you want to put a hook in a place where the kids are not going to get hooked on the hook. In other words, you know, be conscious. Be your house should be child friendly if you have young children around the house. Or the Gemara says maybe another way to resolve the discrepancy, even if there are no children, if you have an attendant who walks around the table all the time and you leave the hook in an outside place where you can get hooked on, so that's not good. And or another very simple distinction, it could be day versus night. During the day where you could see the table and you could see the hook, so the hook could be left barak, could be left on the outside. At night, however, where you're not going to be able to see the hook that well, so put the hook in a place where no one's going to get caught on the hook. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we pick it up. Vishal Ama Aretz. Oh, you know, I'll just read this. I'm sorry. Vishal Ama Aretz, Dome, Lamadura, Vikaderis, Makifos Osa, Ukaderis, Makifos Osa. In terms of a table of an Ama Aretz, how does it look like? Basically, it looks like a mess. Right, the Rashbam on the top of Nun Ches Amud Aleph. Mukefes Kederos Va'esh Be'emsa. It's filled with pots. There's a fire in the middle. Afkana Mapa Va'alachem Be'emsa Va'akaros Aviv. The tablecloth is in the middle. The plates are all around it. Basically, it's disorganized. It looks like a mess. So, and tomorrow we continue with this basic idea of illustrating differences between the orderliness of a Talmid Chacham versus the disorder of an Amar.